Greetings and salutations, everyone. This is AC2GS. My name is Roy. And right before I begin the technical net, I would just like to know if I'm full quieting. So if anyone hears any noise in the background that isn't the repeater, let me know. Otherwise, I'll go on with the tech net without any further adjustment.
WS2N, you're solid into Selden, Roy. Good evening.
Okay, very good. I'm glad to hear. Once again, this is AC2GS, and this is the Limark Technical Net. Limark Technical Net has been going strong on Sunday nights at ACM since all the way back in 1982 under the incredible leadership of Dick K2RIW, who unfortunately became a silent key this year. So this is AC2GS, and I am net control operator now for this wonderful institution of Limark's, and I'm glad to have you all around coming up to the holiday season, so I hope that people are having a good time and being safe, and I hope that you have the time to sit down in front of the radio and participate tonight on the Technical Net. As always, I like to remind people that if you can't get onto the radio proper, you can't get in through the Echolink or the IRLP, then there's always email. You could reach us either for questions or topics you'd like to hear discussed or puzzles you'd like to share, or if you'd like me to tap Paul on the shoulder and ask him to take a look at a space report type of story. You can reach us with the email address mailbag@ac2gs.com. Again, mailbag@ac2gs.com. There are links available, and some interesting links I've put up already as time goes on. If I'm able to find further links, I will. But you could go to my link page at any time that you want. We keep it there for the long haul. Just type into your browser roy.ac2gs.com, and that'll bring you to the link page. We maintain a chat room. You could either go through Limark's own website link, or you can just type into your browser chat.ac2gs.com, and that'll take you to the chat room. And we stream this on the Internet. If you have a friend who doesn't have a radio or just doesn't have access to Echolink or IRLP again, they can hear the audio stream by just typing into their browser technet.ac2gs.com, and that'll give them an audio stream. And as always, I like to mention MikeKC2NJI has an archive of the technical nets that go as far back as September of 2006. And his website is amateurradio.tv. So please avail yourself of it. You know, when you have a chance, there are great bits of advice that are still very pertinent, words of wisdom from some of the wisest people that I've met in my life in amateur radio. Let me drop for a second, and then I will go on with today's schedule.
WA2CDL with some information.
Yes, Andy.
Okay, good evening, Roy, and anyone listening. I'm sorry to inform you, I have to cancel tonight. I'm actually on the phone right now waiting for some people at work to get back to the phone because we have a little emergency going on, which has been going on for the past hour. I thought it would be done by now. It's not. I got to wait and wait and wait, and that's what I've been doing. So I don't know when this is going to be done. So I was hoping for everybody listening to have a discussion on shortened dipoles and what to do if someone wants to put up a dipole but doesn't have enough room to put it up. Which would cause them not to put it up for whatever reason in regarding that, and of course the frequency that they want to put the they want to make the dipole for may not be conducive to the area that they have. So there's a nice article that I saw on how to design and place the coils, the loading coils, in the dipole to be the most get the most efficiency out of it, and the discussion would be what to do in that case. So hold off, and we will have the discussion next week. Hopefully without any interruptions. So just wanted to let everybody know. So be prepared for a discussion on shortened dipoles, because that's what it will be. Thanks, Roy. I got to go back. W8CDS.
Okay, thank you, Andy. So our plans for tonight slightly changed. We will, as always, ask if people have any questions of a technical nature and ask them to give us their first name and their call sign. And we'll take the list. We'll get to the first person first, the second person second, and what have you. And we'll work our way down that list. If we continue to have free time, I'll open the subject to science in general and medicine if people want to discuss anything about the COVID virus or the vaccines or what have you. And then at around 10:15, we will have Paul, WS2N, with the space report. So that's my plan. Hopefully we'll do that way and wrap it up in a bow by about 11 p.m. So let me open things up. If anyone has any questions or topics of a technical nature or comments that they'd like to make, please give me your first name and your call sign.
November 2, Hotel Victor Radio, Nick.
Kim, WB2KWC.
And whiskey for the sinus bundle. Opt to the first hour.
Okay, Nick, I have you down. Ken, I have you down. Wes, I have you down. Anyone else want to include themselves on the list for tonight?
KD2, Tango Romeo. I've got a question on circular antennas.
Okay, could you give me your call sign again, please?
Hi, Roy. I guess I probably overjumped with my push-to-talk button. Kilo Delta 2, Tango Romeo Golf.
Okay, very good. We got you down. Anyone else want to put their name on the list for tonight, please? Just give us your first name and your call sign.
This is Mike, KD2BW, Kilo Delta 2, Victor Delta Whiskey.
Okay, Mike is down on the list. Anyone else on the list, please? Give me your first name and your call sign. Okay, first on the list tonight is Nick, N2BHR, HBR, sorry. What's your question for tonight?
Hi, good evening, Roy. This is N2HBR. Everyone, please have a happy holiday. I was focusing Andy at N2HBR over the phone with you because I was on the phone. Something he brought up and something I thought about. Okay, this is my question. Can you hear me okay?
You're about 50% noise. If you could boost your signal or do something with the antenna, I'd appreciate.
I'm doing 50 watts right now. It's a quick question. When you're using digital modes, you know, DMR or any of the digital modes, and you're going through the internet, you're using a hotspot, so you're talking to an HK, let's say, into a hotspot to your computer. Now, when you're using, let's say, Fusion or DMR, any of the digital modes, what are you exactly using? When you're going into the internet, is it going through, like, as a phone line, or are you using data? That's my question.
You're using data because it's operating like a hotspot. So it's not sending an audio stream. It's sending an encapsulated internet protocol packet back and forth. So it's purely data on the part of telecommunications companies.
Okay, that's what I thought, but I was talking to Andy, and, you know, we brought up the subject because, you know, let's say, like, with me, I have Wi-Fi at home, and even on my phone, even if I were to use my cell phone, I have unlimited data from Verizon. It's using data. So when you're using a typical hotspot, let's say I'm hotspot, my laptop, and then over my Wi-Fi. Can you measure the data, or almost, you know, would you, you know, I mean, does anyone know exactly how much data you're using, let's say, per hour or, you know, per minute?
Well, I mean, that's an interesting question that I've never heard before. It would be a kind of a much smaller amount because although it is just an internet packet, it's an audio stream encoded, encrypted audio packet. So the amount of data that's transferred is orders of magnitude lower than something more significant like a video signal. So a simple video YouTube would probably take up 10 or 15 times the amount of data. So it would probably be something like in the megabytes per second category. It wouldn't be too consequential, you know, especially people who regularly watch the odd YouTube or video on their cell phone.
Yeah, Roger, Roy. Well, I mean, that's what I thought. I mean, I know that, you know, I always stream YouTube on my phone. You know, I'm laying in bed, I'm always watching YouTube videos on my phone. But I have Wi-Fi, so I don't care. I'm not using any data, I have unlimited unlimited data on my phone. But I would imagine that's where I'm gonna actually do a test. I have an app called Blue TV for Android on my phone. And what I'm going to do is, before I start the app, I'm going to mark how much data I've used. Let's say I'm going to look at the signal, how much data I've used on my phone. Mark it down. Then go on, say, Fusion, using my phone with a hotspot, because I have an app that allows me to use an Android phone at this space between my hotspot, my mega hotspot, and anything. And then I'm going to talk for, let's say, 10 to 15 minutes, and then recheck the data using that space. You know, I was curious to see exactly how much data one uses when they're on, let's say, Fusion for 20 minutes.
Yeah, that would be a very nice experiment, and I would really appreciate it if after you do it, you come back and tell us the results. My only idea of where this might get into some trouble is the granularity of the reported data usage. It might be such a small amount of data that it dips below the reported differences that it lets you know. So you might have to kind of consume more data over a larger period of time before it'll report the change in the data that you have available to you. But that'll be interesting. I would be amazed if it was anything more than a fraction of a megabyte per minute of audio.
WB2KWC with a comment.
Yeah, sure can. Please.
Okay, I had also looked into this, and the numbers were in kilobytes per minute. One of the things they told you to do is if you are in a bandwidth constrained environment, is to basically disconnect your browser. The dashboard uses more data than the actual voice conversation.
Okay, that's very amusing. I could understand why that would be the case, because you're putting through graphics and it's updating the graphics and refreshing the web page. So I could sort of see where that would be the case. Yeah. I don't know how many kilobytes per minute. You know, it's not going to be, I don't think, 1 or 2 kilobytes, but it'll probably be like 50 or 100 kilobytes, and it probably has a lot to do with the different. Although the different modes are not that terribly different, they might be a little bit. One might be a little bit more efficient. than the other, and it really also depends upon the type of audio signal that you generate. I guess theoretically, if you were to generate just a single tone, it would be smart enough to compress that data down to an infinitesimal little portion, because really it's about compressing information. So that's fascinating. And then please, Nick, when you do that, come back and tell us what kind of numbers you got.
Yeah, absolutely. What I'll do is this week I'm going to do that. And especially with my phone, it's easy because I can go, because I'm using my Android phone as the software that connects to my computer, I can go into the stadium and take. So I'm going to do that like this whole week. And see, you know, see exactly what. So me and Andy, N2H2H, were actually talking about that. He was wondering the same thing, and I said, you know, I'm going to try the experiment. And then I thought about it, I said, let me bring it up to the net. Maybe someone knows, you know, or someone has actually thought of that. All right, thank you, Roy, for your help, and everyone on the net, and everybody have a happy holiday. Let's hope 2021 is better than 2020, but I can't see how it could be any worse. This is N2HVR, Nick, back to that.
Okay, thank you very much, Nick, and I wish you a happy and healthy holiday. I would not tempt the fate. I'm not generally a superstitious person, but I have learned through the years that just when you think it's about as bad as humanly possible, things can end up getting worse, unfortunately. So I hope that that's not the case for any of us, and that 2021 is a heck of a better year, because 2020 has been the pit. So thank you very much, Nick, and thank you very much, Ken, for participating, and you're next on my list. So what's your question or topic tonight, Ken?
Okay. Thank you, Roy. It's a shame that Andy can't give his presentation, because this is kind of similar to that. I'm in an antenna-constrained environment, not because of homeowners association, but just the way my property is laid out. My house is too far offset from the sidewalk, leaving me with not too much of a backyard. Power lines run across the back of the property and along one side of the property for my feed. So I'm always looking and researching antennas. One of the antennas that I had looked at, someone had recommended an NFED half wave. The folks at Vibroplex, which I was surprised that I didn't associate them with antennas, have a half wave antenna. It's, I think, 75 feet, covers 80 through 10. Basically, do I need a ground or a counterpoise for an NFED half wave? And I've been doing research on basically routing it. I want to put it up in my attic. The problem is something 75 feet, I'm going to have to make a couple of bends in it. I'm wondering if that's a problem, or as long as I stay away from metal, am I okay? AC2GS, WB2KWC.
Okay, very good, Ken. My understanding is Vibroplex was bought up by a guy who then consolidated a bit of other hardware, and he's kind of turned it into a mini kind of MFJ, or at least I think that's the plan that he's going for. So it doesn't surprise me that Vibroplex is now selling NFED halfway. Theoretically, if you do a full and complete half-wave NFED, you theoretically should not require a ground, because the whole purpose of a half-wave is that it does not require a counterpoise. Because you're not really kind of using it purely as a half-wave, and you're using it for multiple bands, you're going to end up needing some kind of a counterpoise. If you don't provide your own counterpoise, Mother Nature will simply take the shield of your coax and use that as a counterpoise, whether you like it or not, unless you really put a lot of RF chokes on it. So it's probably wiser to put a proper ground on something like that. Another point that you you asked, can you, does it have to be straight or can it be a little bit on the crooked side? These things tend to be somewhat forgiving. You can bend them. It will distort the radiation pattern somewhat, so be prepared for that to occur. And as you mentioned, the big thing that you don't want to do is put it next to any kind of large metal object close enough in the near field that it can couple to it and then just lose some of the power and just drain it off as waste heat. So I hope I touched on the questions. If not, ask them again, or if you have anything else that comes up, please feel free.
No, I think you answered my questions. I think I'm going to try it. It's not particularly, you know, it's not a fortune. It's like $160-something. And I'm hoping it will work out better on multiple bands than right now my 20-meter dipole that I'm matching on multiple bands using a tuner.
Well, I mean, it all depends. Probably it would be more efficient if you had the dipole and an open line, which is relatively lossless. Once you introduce the coaxial cable, even with an antenna tuner, you'll get some additional losses. You never know until you try. And open ends tend to be very popular for relatively simple, quick installations, where you don't have to worry about too many connection sites that have to be just the right distance from things. So, you know, it strikes me as a good, you know, radiating antenna for some situations. What you have to be aware of is that the balance involved is rated properly for the amount of power that you're going to put through it. Because sometimes they go a little cheap on the balun, and if you put through too much power, you can damage it. Do you know offhand what the impedance transformation of the balun that they're offering is? I've seen 1 to 49. I've seen 1 to 64. Do you know what kind of impedance transformation that model offers?
From what I recall, it's a 1 to 49, and as far as the power goes, the antenna they claim will handle a kilowatt, so running my 100-watt radio, I'm sure will not even challenge it.
Okay, very good. I mean, I'm sure they're not hiding behind lawyer speak, because the wire itself usually is very tolerant of power. The Achilles heel for something like a half-wave NFED is the balun transformer. So, you know, the wire itself of the antenna might be rated for, you know, 2,000 or 3,000 watts, whereas the balun itself might just get to 1 kilowatt or less. It depends. It really, you have to depend upon the company behind it. Some guys just kind of cut corners and other guys don't. So if you feel confident with the company, I don't know what to make of Vibroplex's new enterprises. They have a great name with a great history, but sometimes when it's sold to another person, those things can go out the window. So I wish you luck.
Okay, thank you. I may give it a try. And, I mean, even if they are, you know, grossly exaggerating its power handling capability, I can't imagine claiming a kilowatt, you know, something like that being challenged by 100 watts. Ah, okay, here it says 49 to 1 transformer. It's got some toroids in it. I just may give it a try. It's like $170 and see what that'll do.
Okay, very good. Basically it's a 7-to-1 transform balance. I would agree. You might have some problems with companies that rate it for a kilowatt and you put in, 900 watts and something goes kerblooey, but I would think that 100 watts you shouldn't have a problem. And you don't know it until you set it up. Again, it's like G5RVs and about 3,000 different antenna models. Some people swear by them and other people swear at them. It has a lot to do with how they're mounted, how high they're mounted, what they're mounted near, if there is any kind of metal around them, and the geography of the area that you're mounting the antenna, if it has a clear takeoff angle and such. So I wish you luck.
Okay, I thank you. It looks like the original brand was PAR End Feds, P-A-R, and then E-N-D-F-E-D-Z. So I'll give it a try. What I'll probably do is take down my 20-meter dipole, which is in the same attic, but basically not destroy any mounts for the 20-meter dipole in case I find the end fed totally inadequate. I can put the 20-meter dipole up. I mean, this weekend I made contacts on, the RAS contest. I made contacts 80 through 15 meters. So, I don't want to burn my bridges until I've got the new antenna tested.
Okay, that's wise on your part. You don't disassemble things entirely until you've proven that the replacement is a better thing. Because I've known people kind of do that, and they get very upset with themselves. So, leave the mounting equipment. Worst case scenario, you're back to the beginning, and you have an experimental result to contemplate.
Okay, it'll give me a winter project up in my attic to give it a try. Thanks a lot. AC2GS, WB2KWC.
Okay, very good. Next on my list is Robert, KD2TRG. What's your question or topic tonight, Robert?
Good evening, Roy. KD2TRG here. I'm looking into getting into some of these circular dipoles. My plan is I do a lot of motorcycle riding, and I'm intrigued at taking one of these. I know AntennaCraft makes one, and a couple other companies make one. I'd like to do some of my transmissions from all the parks and go for that QSL card. I don't know anybody who has used these, and I was just wondering if you got any input on them, how reliable they are, because obviously it's convenient that it's circular and I can just fold it up and put it on the bike with no problem. It'd be a little bit more difficult carrying, my one of my 30-foot antennas on the bike. KD2TRG.
Okay, I mean, you picked a rather, to me, esoteric antenna design. It's more like a folded dipole that then is arranged in a circle, in a loop. So it'd be interesting to find out its characteristics. I haven't really done much in the sense of reading. I think that it tends to produce a circularly polarized type of radiation. Not 100% sure, again, because I haven't studied it by that much. Anyone else out there who's more familiar with these circular dipoles?
What kind of dipole?
It's a circular dipole. It basically, it's kind of if you took a loop and you squashed it down, and then you took either end and bent it into a circle.
Okay, sorry for that. This is K2WH. I just happened to turn the radio on and heard that. And I, were they at one time called a halo?
I don't know. Halo might be a slightly different design, I think.
Okay, well, Halo was a gamma match fed circular dipole, basically. They used to use them a lot on 6 meters, 2 meters. Personally, I like a turnstile. It's got more efficiency.
Okay, I think a halo is less of a folded loop that then is circular, and it's more of just a straight, it's sort of like a magnetic loop, actually, except that instead of a variable capacitor, it has fixed end plates, or at least the ones that I've seen designed, and it can be matched with a gamma match, as you mentioned.
Yeah, Roger. Okay. Proceed. Go ahead. I'm just sitting on the side here listening. This is K2WH.
Okay, very good. So getting back to you, Robert, I don't know a lot about them. What frequency range were you planning to use them on? I assume VHF and UHF?
Roger, Roy. Yeah, that's pretty much the way I was going. And there's a company, I guess, run by Victor Alpha 7, Alpha Echo Juliet. He's made these things called antenna crafters. It's a 2 meter circular loop with it, you know, the end of it, it's open, and I'm assuming you can adjust the capacitance because it looks like it has some type of tuning on the end there. And I was just wondering if anybody's had any work with these or used these at all, because it looks really convenient and something that would be really advantageous to take on the bike with me so I could, you know, do my operations from the parks. KD2TRG.
Okay, very good, Robert. Once again, if anyone has had any experience, I'm getting the sense I'm shuffling through Google searches and such, and there seems to be a heck of a overlap between halo antennas and what came up at first when I Googled the circular dipole. So it is probably electronically they're either very close or almost identical, in that some have a fixed capacitance and some kind of bend along and retune. So it probably operates a little bit like a large magnetic loop. Magnetic loops are designed to be fractions of a wavelength, where these look like they're something like a half of a wavelength dipole bent together. So fascinating concept. I'm going to have to read up on them. As you mentioned, I don't see many of them being used in the area. I don't see them as mobile antennas. I don't see them as stationary antennas. They seem rather interesting. You know, for mobile, they're certainly small, so if the price is right, you might want to try it out, see how it works for you, and please feel free to come back and tell us whether you like them or dislike them.
Roger. All right, I appreciate it. Yeah, the whole idea was, it wasn't like I'd be using it while I'd be, you know, driving the bike. It would, you know, be once I set up camp someplace, and I would deploy it that way and try it out. But all right, I'll do a little bit more research. I've got all winter. Obviously, it's not bike season here. So, all right, Roy, AC2GS, this is KD2TRG. I appreciate your help this evening, and have yourself a happy and healthy holiday season, and I'll talk to you guys soon. KD2TRG.
Thank you, Robert. Thank you very much, and I hope you have a happy and healthy holiday as well. Next on our list is Mike, KD2BDW. What's your question or your topic for tonight, Mike?
How are you, Roy, in the net? Mine might be a little deep, so
could let me know if this is a topic for another day, and maybe it was touched on a little bit by Nick. So, as you may know, I'm a new ham. I got my call sign end of November, my radio on the 3rd, and I've only really been talking for 2 weeks. My question is about Wires X. So I have a Yaesu ST3D, and not to step on the repeater or worry about using anyone's time, I looked at a hotspot, and actually a gentleman from England said that the best way to do it is the SDU39 cable, which puts my HT directly into the computer as a personal data mode, basically. So it's basically a better system. I'm going to let it drop. So my question was, and what they said the advantage is that I would get full Wires X, where a hotspot only gets reflectors. So my question is exactly that. Maybe you can explain to me the difference between Wires X and reflectors. What I understand is Wires X is Yaesu's server with the most complete room, then reflectors are basically where they ported those rooms to a different server that connects to... This is where I get a little lost.
Okay. Let me see if I have it. Very good. Yeah, it's not too difficult. The problem is that the three companies... Well, it's really two companies who just kind of... came up with their own digital voice mode and kept it to themselves. Yaesu has Fusion, and for the most part, ICOM has D-Star. On top of that, Yaesu decided to lock down their network, and that's Wires X. It's a server or a server farm probably in Japan. And if you want to directly go in or out of Wires X, you have to do it their way or you can't do it. So you would have to do it either with a Wires X terminal or some kludge that would make Yaesu think that you were using a Wires X terminal. Almost everyone else goes external. So there are Yaesu reflectors that are plugged in to Wires X rooms, so it's an extra bounce in that you're not going directly into Wires X. You're going into a third-party reflector, which is then being linked to Wires X. But it also gives you the option of sampling other things. You can go to a DMR talk group reflectors. You could go to D-Star reflectors. So it sort of limits you to one group of reflectors, one group of network talk groups, reflector rooms, whatever you want to call them. So although that's the probably best kludge to get into directly into Wires X, I think in the ultimate it kind of limits you to a small sampling of the digital domain. A lot of people are on DMR-like talk groups. They're on Brandmeister, and there's XLX, and all kinds of gateways available that you can access via a hotspot, and you can't kind of do that kludge that guy recommended.
Okay, that makes sense. Yeah, it was the advantage that he was saying with the cable direct into the computer for my HT, for example, is twofold. One, I can use it in direct mode, and there'd be no RF. Or I could use it and make it a node where I could or other people could attach to it if that ever happened. And I've heard that that's about 5 to 7 miles. So yeah, okay, I will have to look into that. Now I think I get it. So the advantage of a hotspot would be that I could use D-Star, right, all of them basically off of one hotspot. Even though maybe I wouldn't get all the Wires X rooms, I would get all the other format rooms.
Yeah, that's the gist of it. And I can't tell you definitively that 100 of the WireZecs rooms are reflected, but I can't recall anyone complaining about not being able to get there from someplace else. The third parties that have built these gateway connections have done an incredible job. It's sort of amazing. If anything, there's a lot of redundancy built in, so that if you can't get to a WireZex room via one gateway, you can get there by another gateway.
It's funny almost to be asking this question because I was looking at the VX6 to begin with because I thought I would never use digital. And repeaters for a new guy with an HD can only go so far. And I've actually really enjoyed having conversations with you. It's been a lot of fun. So I'll have to look into that more. I think also the advantage of a hotspot would be to turn it on and connect to it without having to plug it in. And I guess you could use it mobile as well, as Nick was saying.
Yeah, I mean, as long as you have, say, hotspot capability with your cell phone, you can take it any place that you have cell coverage.
Sounds good. Thank you, Roy. And my other question would have been relative to, you know, Ed Bond dipole, but it sounds like Andy's going to have a conversation next week, so I'll hold up until I can, you know, learn more about how to get this HD go out further. Thank you again. This is KD2BBW.
Okay. Thank you, Mike. Thanks for participating. You know, it's only 8:42, so we got a lot of time to chew up. So, you know, it's up to you. If you want to ask the other question, and if you want to ask it again next week when Andy comes, you're free to do that as well.
If we have the time, has anybody had experience with the dual band Ed Fong antenna?
Okay, that's a specific antenna. Is that, what type of antenna is that?
Forgive my beginner status. From what I understand, he is using ladder line. It's a dual band. He makes two models, a roll-up model with ladder line, and then basically, I think it's the same antenna, and he sends it to you where you actually put it in a PVC. I mean, I guess I'm really, the thing is I'm trying to find it inexpensive because my situation here is a permanent antenna to get this HD out further.
And for the issue with a comment.
Yes, comment.
Hi, Roy. Glenn, in for the issue. I have both the roll-up type and the one that you mount in the PVC, and they work pretty well. Definitely will help your handheld get out a little longer, especially if you can mount it outside. And the one in the PVC pipe doesn't really look much like an antenna, so it's good for if you have restrictions for antennas. It's a dual band UHF VHF antenna.
Okay, very good, Glenn. Hope you got that, Mike.
Yep, sounds great. Like I said, I know with this HT and the signal stick, I'm able to reach as far away as receiving Brooklyn and further. It's just that, you know, when I tried to key into Brooklyn, he heard me, but it was very, very faint. So that might be the solution. Thank you.
Okay, very good, Mike. Could you give me the name of the guy who makes it?
The gentleman is Ed Fong, F-O-N-G. He is a professor out in California. Where I got turned on to him is because I was introduced to this hobby because of my hiking. So actually I'm looking at his antenna to put in a tree from when I'm out in the woods just to try and get the repeater. And then someone else pointed to it. Ed, F-O-N-G.
Okay, very good. I think I've heard people mention him, and he has more than a few antenna designs out there, so I'll have to give it another look. So thank you very much, Mike, for participating tonight.
Thank you again for your help. This is KD2 and 73, and if I don't speak to you, have a great holiday and a happy new year.
And for issue with another comment?
Yes, Glenn. I just want to say, Mike, thank you very much, and I wish you a happy and a healthy holiday and New Year. Yes, Glenn.
Mike, another option that I used for quite a long time was a mag mount on a cookie sheet. And I had that up on my roof, which is a piece of coax going down to my... I didn't have an HT, I had a mobile rig, but that's another option that you could try for improving the output of your HT from a resonance.
That's a good idea, Glenn. Also, if you have one of those air conditioner units in your window, some people, if you have a degree of elevation, you can stick a mag mount on that, and it'll give you enough metal mass to get a decent impedance match. People have used that. There are some people who actually stick a mag mount on their refrigerator. It's not the greatest because it's certainly not an exterior antenna, and outside is always better than inside, but I've heard people do it and get away with it.
Yeah, thank you, Glenn. I'll definitely look into that. Somebody just said that today, I think, basically said, as soon as I get an antenna outside the window, I'm going to see a drastic improvement.
Yeah, I think outside and height is the key.
Yeah, I mean, there's an old saying that when it comes to UHF, VHF, there are three important things, height, and height.
I will laugh at that because when I got this radio, there was a simplex conversation going on and my bedroom is in the attic. And if I kept that little rubber ducky touching the ceiling, I got a perfect reception.
Yeah, I mean, different bands have different characteristics, but with UHF and VHF, it's a point-to-point communication. And so the higher you can make your antenna, the better. That's why our repeaters work as well as they do. It's somewhat centrally located, but it's also highly elevated. That's why on occasion when there are hams that are passing by on planes, they can talk to a wide swath of people because they have a heck of a lot more elevation than any of us. So elevation is the most important. Antenna design, takeoff angle, efficiency, all those things are important. But if you plant your UHF, VHF on the ground, it's just not going to get you that far.
Comment in one way, do I?
Yes, Hank.
I can tell you from experience that you get about 205, 210 nautical miles range from a 35,000-foot antenna tower.
That's nice. It's a shame that we all can't have one.
It's a shame I can't keep the one I used to have. But on a serious note, it was a lot of fun to work, folks, with a Yaesu HT. Unfortunately, newer aircraft have more heated windows, and you can't get good reception either through them or in or out. But the older airplanes didn't have heated windows in the back, so while you had a good, fairly good range, you didn't have had a lot of directionality. You could only go to the side of the aircraft that the window was on. And the other thing that was fun, of course, is you could even do well up to half a watt. I found I could hit folks easily with a half watt output that were maybe 100 and some odd miles away. You didn't get the full 200, but you got a pretty decent range.
So, okay. Yeah, I've heard people who've been lucky enough to contact planes passing by and marvel at it. But, you know, it's just elevation at work. So, yeah, it's great the way radios work, radio waves, radios. It's the magic that brings us back day after day to this hobby. Okay, anyone else with any comments or any other questions? We got some free time here, so please, if you have any radio-related technical questions or topics, feel free to give me your first name and your call sign.
KC2EFR, Mitch.
Okay, Mitch, what's your question or topic tonight?
A follow-up counterpoise question. I'll try to be brief. I use for 20 meters, I have a Hustler antenna with a 20-meter resonator, and I basically stick it out my apartment window horizontal. And then for a counterpoise, I have about a 15-foot wire connected to the ground lug on the MFJ tuner, and I throw that out in the opposite direction, just on the floor of my apartment. You know, it's been working. When the propagation is good on 20 meters, it's working. So I want to do the same thing on 40 meters. And I'm kind of trying to figure out, I'm using a 15-foot counterpoise right now, which seems to be working on 20 meters. I'm thinking of using a longer counterpoise with the hope that I could then use that on both 20 and 40 meters. And I was wondering if you had any thoughts on the length of the counterpoise that I could use for both 20 and 40 meters. Back to you.
Well, obviously, if you wanted an equivalency, you would need a 30-foot counterpoise for the 40-meter radiator. Now, some people just put in, you know, one radiator, the longest one, and hope for the best. Other people are belt and suspenders, and they'll actually have two lengths of counterpoise, a shorter one for the higher frequency, a longer one for the lower frequency, the rationale being that it will be more efficient and that due to impedances of current flow, it will kind of auto-select the right counterpoise in somewhat the same way that a fan dipole operates, where you have multiple elements in parallel, and simply by having certain elements be resonant with a lower impedance, well, the current will be drawn to the low impedance resonant one. So although I would suggest if you just had to have one counterpoise, you would try to make it somewhat similar, and that would be 30 feet. If you really wanted belt and suspenders or you want to experiment, you could put the 15 to the side, try the 30, and add the 15 and see what that does.
Right, right. All right. All good suggestions. I appreciate that. Of course, it would be easier to use one long counterpoise because it's really a temporary setup that I throw it in and out, throw down and then wrap up on the template. But anyway, thank you very much. It's been on my mind. This is KC2EFR. Thanks for letting me break in.
No, you're welcome, Mitch. I mean, that's the whole point of the technical mess. It's been going on since 1982, and the whole point of the exercise is to help people out and offer suggestions and thoughts, and if other people who are listening have better ideas, they're always encouraged to come on down, hit that push-to-talk button, and say their piece.
Okay, thank you. The only other thing I would say to change the subject, going back to the last topic on Professor Sung's antenna, that's basically, I believe, a J-pole antenna. Those work pretty well. I think that's what that antenna is that he makes.
Yes, Wesley?
I didn't quite understand your comment. You were saying about impedance that determines right counterpoise selection. Were you talking about hand dipole? Control loss. Interaction.
I don't quite understand the question, Wesley. If you could rephrase it.
You were talking about a counterpoise selection due to the impedance. Entering sheet.
Yeah, well, basically, quarter wave antennas require a counterpoise of some kind. Otherwise, they don't radiate well. So you want to develop a counterpoise to balance the currents and such. Otherwise, you're not going to get much out of your antenna. If you take a quarter wave vertical and you don't do any ground plane with it, you're not going to get a good resonant match.
Are you relating that to the particular antenna?
Well, antennas in general that require counterpoises. Balanced antennas do not require counterpoises, so it would be meaningless for that. So we're talking about unbalanced antennas.
I thought in some of the antennas that could be marginal, because marginal counterpoise, because the coaxial cable itself is the counterpoise, or because the feed line rotates along through the antenna interchange.
Yeah, well, once again, I'm not quite getting the question.
The role of counterpoise, the role of the counterpoise and important of the counterpoise in terms of impedance interchange.
Well, I mean, it's important in the entire dynamics of an antenna as a radiating object, and its input impedance is a factor. It's not the totality. You could impedance match a unbalanced counterpoiseless antenna. It still would not be a good radiator, though.
And the last question, were you relating to folded counterpoise system?
Say again?
Were you relating your comment to folded counterpoise system? Interesting.
Not necessarily. I don't think we got into the details of what you're doing with the counterpoise. It was just a more generalized conversation of a radiating antenna that warrants a counterpoise, and how changing the resonant frequency changes the optimal counterpoise length.
Yeah, just short comment. The feed impedance resistive value decrease usually by 1/2 ohm with wider spacing of the counterpoises, which indicates less counterpoise loss. So impedance is a value test in this case, because only counterpoise spacing changed significantly, and the counterpoise well above 30 feet lossless earth behave a little bit different than on the ground. And so that those counterpoise could be measured by means of resonance induction.
Okay, and by the way, I just saw that Ed Fung seems to be fascinated with J-pole. So I think Glenn mentioned that most likely these Ed Fung dual bands are a modified version of a J-pole. Some people love J-poles, other people kind of discount them and think that it uses a stub and such, and they kind of say that it's a low gain antenna. But you know, if it works for you, it works for you. Getting back to you, Wesley, there's a major difference in what counterpoises are meant to do depending upon how far the antenna is away from Earth ground. If it's close to Earth ground, in addition to simply being a counterpoise that's needed even in free space, you also have to shield the ground coupling, and so that's why a reasonable omnidirectional vertical only requires 3 or 4 radials, which is basically another term for counterpoise, when it's separated from Earth, whereas if it's smack dab on the ground, you need as much as 36 radials just to shield the antenna from ground coupling.
Yes, I do agree with it. The dipole field.